Goodness. About 1998, Debbie and I, Elliot, our third child, our boy was just born, newborn, and we moved from Renton to Machias. I was a youth pastor in Bellevue for 6 years at a church there, and then I took a position as the adult ministries pastor at Cascade Community Church, which is our mother church. And so it was a half-time position. So the plan was we were going to find some land and try to build a house. And I had had some construction experience in the past, but had never built a house. And so we found this mobile home. We found some property and we found this mobile home that was like a 1963 mobile home with dirty green, army green carpet, and everybody who saw it would laugh at us and said it looks like it was hit by a train. And so we set this thing up on this property, I was out there every minute that I wasn't working at Cascade for the halftime position. I was there digging trying to put the foundation in. And once the foundation was in for this house that we were building, and we were maxing out credit cards to build it because I couldn't qualify for a building loan. And we were like, okay, at the end of the project, though, once the house is there, an appraisal will give it a value and I can get a mortgage on it. So that was the, you know, sort of on a shoestring plan. And so I remember the foundation was in, and I had been at Cascade for maybe a month, and all new people, didn't know anybody there, and up drives this guy in this little Ford Ranger truck, Scott Reifers. Some of you may know him. He works for the Redmond Fire Department. But he gets out of his truck, and he pulls his tool bags out, and he said, can I help you build? And I'm like, this is cool. I'm like, yeah. And this is cool. It's like this brother in Christ is coming, and he's gonna, you know, give a few hours to another person in his church and help out. And I just thought that was so cool. And he knew so much more about framing than I did. And so I had forgotten so much because I had framed in high school and my first couple years of college, and it had been years. And so I was doing things wrong. He was like, you know, very gently, well, you know, you might think about doing this. And so he helped me get going. And so the next day I got off of work at Cascade around 2 o'clock, headed home, and got there 2:30, and up rolls Scott Reifers again. I'm like, dude, what are you doing here? And he said, I like this better than golf. Every day he didn't work at the fire department, and many days he did, he showed up at my house for months and helped me frame my house. I was blown away. It was like Jesus drove up, you know, and the impact on me was huge. Besides getting our family out of our train wreck of a home, a trailer we were living in, I saw what Jesus meant when he said, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. Edgar Guest said, I would rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I would rather you walk with me. I don't know why I'm so emotional. I would rather you walk with me than merely point the way. Just talk amongst yourself for a minute. I'm going to drink some coffee. Yeah. Play with your cell phones. There's games on them. Okay, he said, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather you walk with me than merely point the way. The eye is a more ready pupil than ever was the ear. Good advice is often confusing, but example It is always clear. The impact on me with what Scott did was my faith. I was a pastor, but my faith in Jesus Christ and my confidence in Christianity grew because of what Scott did. And Scott didn't probably ever initiate a conversation about God or Jesus or the Bible. He just washed our feet. And then he came back and he washed our feet again. And then he came back and washed our feet again. And then he came back and washed our feet again. And we saw Jesus in ways that I can get up here and speak every week, and you can hear about 1,000 sermons, and it wouldn't change you like what Scott did. And so today, I want to talk about the power of community. What has the power to change a city? What has the power to melt a heart? What has the power to save the lost? What has the power to build a bridge? What has the power to melt a heart? What has the power to feed the hungry? And what has the power to reach a people across the globe? Community. Community is a mindset. Community is a phenomenon. It is something that happens when hearts move from proximity to initiation. Community is desire with initiation. Desire with investment. Everybody deep down wants it, but few really have it. And you know what? Community starts with you. If you do nothing about community, it will not happen. I've asked Wes Robbie to come and just share about how this community has impacted and is impacting communities across the globe. So Wes, why don't you come up?
Robbie, I have the privilege of talking to you a little bit about an organization called Fruit Bearers, which was born out of this community here a couple of years ago. I have the privilege of being the one the Lord has chosen to direct it, and I want to tell you just a couple of stories about what is happening as a result of what has started here in this church. First of all, I want to tell you about just our mission, very briefly. I told this story once before, and I'm not going to go into it in detail. This little girl, Judy and I visited when we were over there in December. The Lord encouraged us to take a magnifying glass over there. We didn't know why. We didn't know we were going to meet this little girl. We did. It turned out she's almost blind. Teacher was having a terrible time teaching her to read. And the magnifying glass helped her to see the words. The Lord arranged the whole thing before we left. I didn't know it until we got back and he started to take the scales off of my eyes and said, I arranged the whole thing before you went over there. Out of that, he then told me what the mission, his mission for Fruit Bearers is. He said, Wes, you don't know how many more hungry and deaf and blind and crippled children are still up in those mountains of Negros Oriental Philippines, but I do. Now go and find them and show them my love. That's what we've been doing for the past year. This story started right here with a girl in our congregation by the name of Abby Lawrence. She came to me after a service one day and said, I want to sponsor a child in the Philippines. So I gave Abby about 5 different profiles of kids that she could choose from which one she wanted to sponsor. A couple of them were cute little kids and so on and so forth. And a few days later, Abby got back to me and she said, well, I really want to sponsor one of those cute little kids. But, you know, I've been praying about it and the Lord keeps telling me to sponsor Michael. Michael's 23 years old. He's almost blind and he's in the third grade. His family's in such poverty he couldn't go to school on a regular basis. And Abby says, do you think that's kind of weird? And I said, well, Abby, I said, Michael's the toughest one for me to find a sponsor for. Number two, he's the most unlikely one for you to choose to sponsor. To me, it sounds like a God thing. She says, okay, I'm going to sponsor Michael. That started the ball rolling on an incredible story. I told Abby that I was leaving to go to the Philippines in about 2 weeks and that I would go visit Michael at his home and I would bring her a first-hand report. And that's exactly what I did. We had to go up to the top of a steep hill on motorcycles and we had to take a trail halfway down the steep hill and we came to Michael's house. And it was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. Judy and I lived in the Philippines for 3 years and we saw a lot of bad housing over there. But Michael's house took the cake. This is where Michael and his family lived. You can see there's almost no floor left. Oh, there's almost nothing left. And why didn't they go buy materials and repair it? Well, when you don't have enough to eat, you don't go buy materials and repair the house. You go buy food if you can. And that was their situation. And so that is what I discovered was Michael's house. That night, as I was in my hotel room, and a thunderstorm rolled through, and I heard it raining outside, and I thought of Michael and his family, I thought, Lord, wouldn't it be great if we could bring some guys from our church, you know, Randy knows how to build, and Ed Herbert, and all these guys who know how to build, and bring them over and build a new house for Michael and his family. And then the Lord said, Wes, that's nice, but I got a better idea. He said, you raise the money to buy the materials, and you get the community here to build the house. And that's what we set out to do. I sent out an email. We had determined that it would take about $2,000 to buy the materials for the house. And then we set out to find people in the community who would build the house. And the community responded. First thing we had to do was go to the landowner. The people living here, Michael and his family, they don't own the land. And if we were to build them a new house without the permission of the landowner, he could come and say, thank you very much, ask Michael and the family to leave and move in. So we had to get his permission. We went and talked to the landowner. That's me and him beside his house. He turned out to be a gentle man of God that I was tremendously impressed with. He said, yes, I want you to build a house for Michael and his family. He says, I've been trying to help them for years. They're tenant farmers on my land. I don't require their part of the crop to come to me because they're so poor. Yes, and he even showed us a better place to build the house. This is the house as we began to work on it. It's framed there. The one on the lower right is a little boy that's carrying some what's called NEPA shingles for the thatch roof. And all of the materials we got at a discount. We went, for instance, to the mayor of the town. You've got to get the people behind you on something like this, especially over there. We went to the mayor of the town, told her what we wanted to do. She said, yeah, I think it's great. She said, if you need an engineer, the city engineer is at your disposal. She said, I will assign several city workers to work on the project at no cost to you. She said, you can use the city truck to haul materials up to the site at no cost to you. We went to other local government officials. They all said, yes, we're behind you all the way on it. They donated materials. They sent workers. The family, of course, pitched in to build. Relatives, neighbors, the community came together and built this house for Michael and his family. There's the finished product. Is that better than what they were living in? The lower right picture there is looking back up the hill at the house, and you can see it's set in cement, the pillar set in cement. It's going to last a long time. The Michael, and he has a sister, younger sister by the name of Jennifer, who's almost blind also. He has an older brother who's almost blind. The three of them went down to the river, down quite a ways below their house, and brought the water, dug the sand out of the banks of the river to bring up for the cement. So even they were involved in it. Many people were involved in making Michael's house possible and for Michael's family. This picture is of Joy. She is a gal who works for us full time over there for Fruit Bearers. Joy had a dedication service at the house when it was finished. The whole family got together and they dedicated the house to the Lord and gave all the glory to the Lord. And while they were having this service, Joy said, you know, it seems to me somebody must have been praying in this family or somewhere here to make this happen. And the mother said, you know, I don't really know God or don't know much about him, but we were in such a hopeless situation. I prayed the best I could, and here we are. And this was through her tears, and it was such an emotional time. And it even goes beyond that. Joy's mom and dad are pastors. After the house was finished, they went up there totally on their own and had Bible studies with the family. As it turned out, Michael's whole family accepted the Lord. The whole family. And in addition to that, I mean, this is an up-to-the-minute report, folks. Today is August 14th, right? Sunday. The family was baptized on August 14th. The Philippines is 15 hours ahead of us, and so it was about this time, on August 14th, that family, the total family, was baptized down in that river below the house. Isn't that wonderful? It started with a little girl, 15-year-old girl by the name of Abby, being obedient to the Lord and sponsoring Michael instead of one of the cute little kids who also need sponsors, but she sponsored Michael, and the rest came about, as I've just told you. I'm going to tell you another story very quickly. Some of you have seen this picture before. It's a little hard to look at. This girl's name is Geneseo. She was burned very badly in a fire at her home when she was 4 years old. You can see the picture on the left there. That's when, before she had gotten any help. And what happens in a situation like that is the child continues to grow, but the scar tissue doesn't grow. And so as the child grows, it actually pulls the child apart. And we found Geneseo, and the Lord gave us the privilege of getting involved in her life. And this church actually helped. You probably don't even know this, but it was real under the radar about a year and a half ago to get Geneseo her first surgery. We now have two plastic surgeons who are involved with us, and they are going to give Geneseo six more surgeries, and that will bring her to where she'll be able to live a normal life. But the real story isn't Geneseo today. The real story is what this led to. Now, we had Joy, our employee, would go out to see Geneseo on a regular basis and visit with her mom. And she was out there at the beginning of the summer, and she saw a whole lot of kids in the neighborhood. And she's always thinking, and so she says to the mother, what would you think about having a vacation Bible school for all these kids around here? And the mother, turns out she's a Christian, and she says, I think that's wonderful. She says, I'll get the kids together, I'll get the community involved, you bring the materials and the teachers and the snacks, and we'll do a vacation Bible school. It's about a mile trek back into the jungle where they live. And so that's what happened. I got to be there the first day I took that picture. And they had, the first day we had 20 kids there. And by the last day, we had 45 kids and a whole bunch of the mothers. And the speaker on the last day asked if any of the kids or anybody there would like to accept the Lord into their heart. And many of the kids raised their hand. So we went from Geneseo to 45 kids. But it doesn't stop there. See that little girl that's sitting down with a blue dress on the end of the bench over there? Her name is Faya. We noticed that Faya was not really participating very much in the activities, and we couldn't figure out why, but then it became pretty evident that she couldn't hear what was going on. And so we took Faya aside, and we looked a little more closely at her and discovered that she had bad infections in both ears, drainage coming out of both ears. And we said to each other, we're going to get Faya to a doctor. We have an ear, nose, and throat specialist in the nearby city that he doesn't work for us, but he will do cases that we bring to him, he'll do for nothing. It was very difficult to get a hold of Faya's mother because she gets up at 4 a.m. and goes to work and gets home at 9 p.m. 7 days a week to support her family. The father's out of the picture, and so that's she has to support her family that way. It was very difficult to get a hold of her, but finally we did, and she agreed to bring Faya in to the clinic. Okay, the day that she brought Faya, there they are, mother and little girl Faya. Is she about the cutest thing you ever saw? She became my next granddaughter. Anyway, we brought her in. The doctor examined her ears, said, yes, they're very bad. She's got two punctured eardrums, and he cleaned them out. He prescribed antibiotics, which Fruit Bearers later purchased for the family. And we're sitting there in his office, and I said to him, what do you think the prognosis is for Faye's hearing? He says, well, it might be pretty good. We got it early. And but of course, she'll have to be tested later on. He says, but she won't be able to be tested here in Dumaguete City because there is no audiology booth. Now, let me show you something. This is a picture of the Philippines. The one on the left is the entire Philippines, 7,107 islands. And this is where we do our work, where the blue arrow is there, the island of Negros. And we do it just in the dark red area, which is called Negros Oriental. Let's go over to this side. Here is Negros close up. The red spot down on the lower right is Dumaguete. You can see that. That's Dumaguete City. That's where we were. Dumaguete City is about 150 to 200,000 people. It's a medical center, and there isn't a single audiology testing booth in Dumaguete. If you want to have your hearing tested, you have to go up to Bacolod, upper left there, which is an 8.5 hour bus ride one way, and it's no fun. I've done it before. And or you can go over to Cebu City, which is another whole day to get your hearing tested. Not only that, Dumaguete is a medical center, not only for the city of 200,000 people, but for a radius that encompasses probably a million people or more. Not a single audiology booth in Dumaguete. I'm sitting there in the doctor's office, and I'm thinking, I think we can do something about that. I'm thinking of Adventure Community Church and one particular individual who sells audiology booths and audiology equipment by the name of Brian Hillebush. And about 2 days after I got back from the Philippines, I found myself having lunch with Brian Hillebush and told him the story. And Brian said, here's what I'll do. I will give an entire audiology booth. I'll give all the equipment that goes in it. I will fly over there at my own expense, and I will direct the installation of the audiology booth. That's how this community is having an impact on that community, clear across the world. That is going to affect so many people, improving their lives. I'm just thrilled with it. We're going to be taking the booth over. Well, we'll be shipping the booth over. Then we will be going over probably sometime near the end of the year or early next year to install it. And we're open to volunteers to go along at your own expense help install it. It's going to be a thrilling deal. If you go over there and you can help, we'll also go visit Michael's house and many other things. It's going to be a tremendous thing. So, those are my stories about how Fruit Bearers is involved in community, how this community is impacting a community on the other side of the world. And it's such a privilege to be a part of it. And I thank you all so much. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but Fruit Bearers, we consider any good deed or kindness done in the name of Jesus. That's why our name is Fruit Bearers. Who is called to be a fruit bearer? All believers. There are certain believers that have special gifts, evangelism, administration, giving, and so on. But all believers are called to bear fruit. Why? To bring glory to our Father. Not to bring glory to ourselves. Not to bring glory to fruit bearers. To bring glory to our Father. And that's what it's all about. When we do a project and a family says to us, "Oh, thank you so much. You're so wonderful." We say, "No, no, no. It's not us. It's not fruit bearers. Give glory to the Lord. We are only His hands and feet. He sent us. You give glory and thanks to Him." Fruit bearers, that's just contact information that you can read. There's only one thing I want to call attention to because it's fairly recent. Fruit Bearers is a qualified charity for Microsoft's matching gift program. And if anybody in here happens to work for Microsoft, you know what that means. So, anyway, that's the information, and there are a couple of reply envelopes and so on in the back if anybody's interested. Randy?
Clicker. What's worth your time? What has the power to change a city? What has the power to change a heart, melt a heart? What has the power to save the lost? What has the power to build a bridge and tear down walls and feed the hungry and bring people to a saving knowledge of Christ? It's community. Community of Christ pulling together and stepping out. We are beginning a series because we are heading into a year in community. So we are going to do that by looking at the power of community in a series for the rest of August and September. And I want to take us back to this passage where Jesus washes the disciples' feet before we close here and just kind of walk through it together a little bit. It was just before the Passover feast, and Jesus knew that the time had come for Him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved His own who were in the world, He now showed them the full extent of His love. And how do you do that? The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. And Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under His power, and that He had come from God and was returning to God. And so He got up from the meal, took off His outer clothing, wrapped a towel around His waist, and after that He poured water into a basin and began to wash His disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around Him. And He came to Simon Peter and He said, "Lord, are You going to wash My feet?" Jesus replied, "You don't realize now what I'm going to do, what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash My feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "A person who's had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body's clean, and you're clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him. And that was why he said not everyone was clean. And when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord." In other words, you call me your example. You look up to me. You call me the one who sets the pace for you. And rightly so. For that is what I am. Now that I, your example, your leader, your Lord, your teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. How is this showing them the full extent of his love? It says now he's going to show them the full extent of his love. How is washing their feet showing the full extent? Think about that. What is it about washing their feet? Now, just so you kind of get an idea, they would have typically, in that era, they would have gone to a public bath. They're going to have a special dinner. They would have gone to the public bath. They would have washed everything. They would have been clean, which Jesus refers to. Their whole body's clean. But walking back to get to the room, you know, they're walking in sandaled feet, dusty, dry climate, feet are dirty. It would, washing their feet when they come in, because they're gonna lay around. The way they would eat was they would cram around a small table, kind of laying or sitting on the floor, feet everywhere, you know what I mean? And so it'd be like after you work out in the garden for a few hours, your hands are dirty, you're going to wash your hands. It's just right to wash your hands before you sit down at the table and eat. In our culture, their culture, very similar, but you're going to have to wash your feet just because of the way they sat around. So how is this showing the full extent of his love? He humbled himself. His love was demonstrated by a serving. Good. There was a real need there. Yeah. Those are good. Those are good. I was kind of thinking about this and just asking the Lord about it. And what kind of came to mind for the first time that I've ever read this passage was my kids. And I was thinking, if my son or daughter was out playing in the... I'm kind of a germaphobe kind of guy. You know, when I shake your hand, I usually... After I shake enough hands on Sunday morning, I go do the, you know, antibacterial stuff. And I don't drink out of even my wife's water bottle. It's weird. I know, I need therapy. But if my son or daughter was out playing in barefoot in the backyard and they got their foot cut, I wouldn't even think twice about them getting in there and washing off the cut, you know, and dressing it and putting Neosporin on it and just taking, because their feet are precious to me. It's my kids. I think when Jesus was washing his disciples' feet, he felt that way about their feet. Full extent of his love. The stuff we go, ooh, you know, we're grossed out by, I think Jesus, the parts of us that we're even ashamed of, Jesus loves those things about you, about his disciples. It's this love that would go and find... I'm guessing that people living in that house that's all broken down in the Philippines, I'm just guessing, Wes, that it didn't probably smell really great. I'm guessing that it probably wasn't what we're used to in terms of, you know, there may have been some things you needed to cross getting out of our sort of sanitary culture to really love and to touch people who are living in a third world situation. The kids who went to work up in Mount Vernon with just a couple weeks ago, they were up there doing vacation Bible school things with children of migrant workers, and they said they were playing and there was sewage, running down the hill, open. My daughter fell in it. That was a great story. But, we look at stuff like that and just kind of go, ooh, dirty feet. I think that didn't even cross Jesus' mind. Because it was showing that foot level love. Pardon me. And so I think that's what that, I think that was the example. Jesus was demonstrating to us how to see each other differently. He wants us to love each other at the level of feet. Deliberate love that crosses the boundaries of our comfort zones. And I think that's where the power of community gets its power. I think the early church remembered this object lesson that Jesus gave. And you see in Acts 2, all the believers were together and they had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Selling their possessions and goods? When's the last time you sold something to provide a need, provide for a need in the Philippines or some other country or a neighbor? The last time you sold something to do that. But they were selling. Something was happening here. They sold their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts, and they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Because when that kind of foot-level love is being expressed, people are drawn like flies to a, like moths to a flame. Don't go with the flies illustration. It is magnetic. I lost half of you. All right, let that go. Come back to me. All right, so you might be saying, gosh, it's really, what I'm hearing is really cool. It's like Wes has got this community, these people who've connected with him. It's made his heart come alive. He's heard from the Lord. He's stepped out in a mission. Other people have done that because of the result of community. I want community like that. I want to be connected like that. And you might be thinking that, and you might be feeling like, I'm not really a part of any kind of community that's like that transformational foot level. What do I need to do to do that, to get there? And so we're going to spend a year focusing on community, getting involved in community. And the simple answer is start a group or join a group. We have, let's review. There's incredible power in community. Community here changes lives there. And Jesus showed us how to live in community. We wash feet. We have three different kinds of groups that are going to be starting October 2nd. The groups will launch that week. They are activity groups, coordinators Sarah Bender, and groups that are going to meet over a shared interest, like dirt biking, cooking, gaming. You can start a group based on a interest that you would love. And this is just about connecting, making new friends. That kind of group is, you watch. These activity groups, they're going to spawn and spin out life and transformation. But they're going to begin as just fun. And so there's activity groups that you could start. I talked to one person who said, I want to start a group that's about favorite meals. And we rotate and go and do, like, we rotate, like, the, okay, we, this week we're at so-and-so's house, and they're going to make their favorite meal, and then we're going to go to the next person's house, and they're going to make their favorite meal the next week, and on and on. Then there's growth groups, and the coordinator for that is Meredith Ward, and these are groups that want to be challenged, people who want to be challenged spiritually and go deeper. These are about meeting in someone's home one evening a week. They have some sort of study that they share. There's probably going to be homework. There's going to be everything from wild at heart groups for men only, captivating groups for women only. There's going to be couples groups. There's going to be whole family groups. And we'll see what groups form, because who's going to be leading those growth groups? You are. Those of you who register to lead a group. And then missions groups. And this is the coordinator of that, Joe Kremple. By the way, Sarah, Meredith, and Joe are our community group team. And so they have all the answers, and they're writing all the stuff to make it happen. Missions groups meet to bring the kingdom of God to the community and to the world. And so Wes has talked to me about starting a Fruit Bearers community or mission group for the fall. And so there's going to be more on that. But there's already a Ethiopia group I've heard about. There's an Albania group. Somebody was talking about a Duval shut-ins group, where people are going to go to, you know, once every or twice a month, go do things for shut-ins that need help around their home. So these guys, they plan, they bring medical supplies. They can, anything from bringing medical supplies to the Philippines or serving shut-ins once a week. It could be, you know, one group was talking about once a week going to the city of Duval and getting their drink orders and going to Starbucks and bringing them drinks once a week from Starbucks. That was going to be what their mission was. So, I love it. I mean, talk about making an impact. And all right, so these community groups, sessions are going to last from 6 to 10 weeks. So they're going to start week of October 2nd, go 6 to 10 weeks. You decide whether it's 6 or 10 as the leader. And then they shut down. So it's a short-term commitment. It's not like you're on the hook for the rest of your life. Then registration for new groups will start back up in December, and there's going to be a new launch in January. Some groups will re-up and want to do a second round or a third round, but essentially each quarter the groups end and start again. So commitment is it's not like you're stuck with it for the rest of your life. It's driven by you, so there may be 5 groups this fall or 50 groups. Although I'm hearing, as I said, rumblings of some awesome ideas for every kind of group. Group registration is open on our website right now. It closes in 2 weeks. Once it's closed, then there's always winter quarter for you to register your group. So if you want to do a group, you go to adventurecommunitychurch.com, hit community groups, and then there's a registration button. You say register my group, you click it, and it has lots of questions and things that, you know, it asks you what your group name is and all these things. You will be assigned a coach. You won't be left out there on your own. You'll be assigned a coach. There's support, and then your groups will be promoted on the website. And mid to late September, when we're getting ready for group signups, and then there's a big kickoff celebration coming up right before groups launch for all the leaders. And so if you're going to be a group leader, you'll go to the celebration dinner thing. So that's that. We've got a little video that I'd like to show you about that, and then I want to give you one more announcement, and then we'll let you go.